Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Libros Libres, Books Are Freedom. I am your host, Margot Borras, author of Growing Up in La Colonia, and the co-host of another podcast about books, Book Versus Movie. This is episode 3. Our last episode was Picks for Pride Month, and our first episode was books about dismantling racism. And already, I feel like I need to say that we're going to be talking about both of those topics a lot. As soon as I posted both of those, each episode, my mind became flooded with all the other books that I should have recommended on the topic of, I posted the racism one and I immediately thought, oh, Angela Davis, Women Race in Class. Blah. Why didn't I talk about that? So we will be revisiting those topics quite a lot. But one topic that we're going to be discussing over and over and over again on Libros Libres is the topic of libraries. This is, after all, a podcast designed specifically to save one library, one library in the little barrio of La Colonia in Oxnard, California. Now, also, I want to be clear. I don't know if I've made this clear before. I don't live in Oxnard, California, and I'm not from there. I live about 200 miles away from Oxnard in San Diego. That's where I was born. But my book is about the barrio of La Colonia, which was the childhood home of Cesar Chavez and also the birthplace of both of my parents. So I do have an emotional investment in the place, but the library of La Colonia is very, very small. It's only about the size of a two-car garage, and it only has a maximum occupancy of 36. And I kind of think, actually, that 36 is the maximum occupancy for the room when it's empty. But, of course, the room is not empty. It's filled with books, and it's got computers in it. But I guess you could fit 36 people in there. They wouldn't be very comfortable. But anyway, earlier this year, the city of Oxnard announced that it was planning to close the La Colonia Library in order to save the annual operating costs of just under $27,000. Apparently, the city is suffering from years of mismanagement. This is what they said, not me. They have themselves said that after years of mismanagement, they find themselves with a $9 million deficit. And one of the first things that they decided to do about the deficit was to close the Colonia Library. Now, there was a great deal of outcry in the community. People showed up for the library and spoke out at city council meetings and budget meetings throughout the city. There was a lot of grassroots activism that was happening in front of and behind the scenes. Funds were raised through donations, and the city has given the La Colonia Library a one-year extension, which is great. But a year is not a very long time when you're talking about securing grant funding for something like a library, which this little library has none of at the moment. And so in the meantime, in order to get funds kind of coming to the library to help keep it open as soon as possible, as a podcaster and a writer and a lover of books, I decided to start this podcast, Libros Libres, to help collect funds to keep this little library open in the barrio of La Colonia. And the way that you can help do that, if you love books and you care about literacy, and maybe you don't live in Oxnard, but hey, you think that the people who put affordable produce on our tables deserve a library, go to patreon.com/libros libres. Again, that's Patreon, patreon.com/libros libres. And you can see how for as little as $2 a month, you can help support keeping a library open in a community that needs it more than many, many others that you may be aware of. And if you would like to contact me about books that you'd like me to discuss here at Libros Libres, please do. My email is coloniabook@gmail.com. That's coloniabook at gmail.com. And this podcast and my blog and information about my book, Growing Up in La Colonia, can all be found at my website, coloniabook.com. So today, yes, we're talking about libraries. We're talking about books about libraries, because that's what we talk about here, is books and libraries. And when I was thinking about the books that I wanted to talk about today, I couldn't help but think of this sketch from Comedy Central's Alternatino. You probably know the one I mean.
Tonight on Clock Ticking on a Screen, we'll investigate the question that has been baffling limited Spanish speakers for generations. That's right, we'll finally answer. ¿Dónde está la biblioteca?
So this past week, the American Library Association held its national conference in Washington, D.C., and I have been following it. I have been fangirling all over the place, seeing what the librarians are up to, who are they talking about, who are they protesting, because they did do some protesting while they were in Washington, D.C., and I am still catching up on Twitter. I think it's ALAC19, something like that. Just look for the ALA. That's the American Library Association. And who was winning awards and who was talking. And of course, it was, and it's all talk about libraries. I'm not a librarian, but I have a lot of librarians in my life and I deeply appreciate what they do. So I wanted to hear all about what the librarians are up to this year. And one of the things that, I mean, look, The conference started off with a bang. Here's the opening talk by writer Jason Reynolds. Just check this out.
Session speaker, Jason Reynolds.
I hear about it. I'm in the schools. I'm in your neighborhoods. I'm watching librarians have to serve six schools. I'm in the schools where there are no libraries. I'm in the prisons where there are no libraries. Something is the matter when people are trying to stop information flow. Perhaps it's because people know that that information is a tricky thing. It's a direct parallel, right? Every single religious practice, no matter what that religious practice is, historically has been persecuted, all of them, including the yogis. Every single library system or system for information dissemination has been challenged historically, all of them, which means the library is sacred, just like the church is sacred. And if my body is a temple, like my mama say, then that would mean it could be possible that my body could be a library. Here's what I'd like us to think about. Here's what I'd like us to think about moving forward. Maybe what librarians really are architects. And maybe what your libraries truly are warehouses where we build human libraries. Walking, talking libraries. What does this mean, right? What does this mean? I know somebody like, I don't know what you're talking about. What does this mean? Well, let's talk about what a library is. There's a reference desk. Wouldn't it be incredible if young people walked around with their own reference desk, a reference desk here, a reference desk here, right? Something they could tap into when they needed answers, something they could tap into when they felt lost in a space, something they could tap into when they were searching for something that felt so far away. Libraries are spaces with bookshelves. You see, the thing about me and Aaron sitting on that roof is that what we were actually doing was exchanging narratives. He was putting his books in my stacks. I was putting my books in his stacks. My parents are going through a divorce, Aaron. My parents are going through a divorce too, Jay. How you feel? I feel sad. I'm going to store that away for you. How you feel? I feel scared. I'm going to store that away for you. What you want to do when you get older? I don't know, man, but I hope I live a life that feels like every day is Saturday. I'm going to keep that book in me. I'm going to hold that for you. You keep mine and you. We can exchange our information. We can literally go back and forth loaning each other the books and housing them within ourselves to be pulled up whenever we tap into the reference desk. Imagine what it would be like. Imagine it. I feel so grateful for him. So grateful to walk around with narratives that are not like my own, but still share parts of me. It's an incredible feeling to know that I hold someone's stories that I can then use to be more empathetic. And speaking of empathy, libraries serve as safe spaces. Imagine what it would be like if we trained young people to grow up to actually be safe spaces. Places where people can come to. But just think about it. It's not so esoteric. It's not so abstract, right? Imagine what it would be like if young people were the safe havens for their families and friends, for the people around them, for the homelessness and all the kids who have less than them. Imagine what it would be like if they were the spaces that you work in. Imagine. Because the truth of the matter is just like the library in Alexandria was destroyed, just like people have been persecuted, the truth is, unfortunately, we can't guarantee that all of your buildings are going to stay. So we have an obligation to make sure that if for some reason, God forbid, they don't stay, that young people understand the library ain't that, that it's this. I appreciate y'all. Thank you very much.
You see what I mean? Wow. And some of my favorite writers of all time were speaking about libraries and how important they are to our survival. Libraries do so much for us, so much beyond just providing books. Of course, as I spoke of before, there's internet, you know, for communities who don't have internet and they need to apply for a job or they need to learn English or they need to do research, they need to find out how to file their taxes. The library is the only place where you can go and do that for free. Recently, there was a little bit of buzz going on in the Twitterverse about people saying that we should get rid of libraries and instead we should have things like Amazon stores. Not that I don't love a good bookstore, you know I do, but it's not the same thing as being as a library. You can't go to a bookstore and ask somebody to show you how to knit. I know one of our local libraries has a knitting group. One of our local libraries here in San Diego, we have a lot of libraries here. One of our local libraries offers tech classes, how to use social media, English as a second language, all kinds of services. Plus, they're often first responders for things like overdoses, for the homeless community, for many, many marginalized, disenfranchised people in our society who don't have access to a bookstore. And it's really hard to build real, lasting community based on transactional relationships. You know what I mean? So this first book I'm going to recommend is one of my, I think it's the best book, or at least my favorite book that I've read in the last year. And that is saying something. I read on average like 10 books a month. But this is my favorite book that I've read in the last year. It is by Eric Klinenberg and it is called Palaces for the People. It has kind of a long title. So hang tight. It is called Palaces for the People, How Social Infrastructure Can Help Fight Inequality, Polarization, and the Decline of Civic Life. Which, when you look at this on the cover and you're thinking, that's a pretty tall order. But doggone if he doesn't make a pretty sound case. He pretty much proves all of that. And it's a very accessible read. It's not a very academic, dry read. It's very engaging. He opens with talking about a heat wave that happened in Chicago in the, when was it, in the early 2000s? No, 1995, sorry. 1995, this heat wave in Chicago in which many people died. And so he made a study of what was the difference in communities where people died during the heat wave versus people surviving during the heat wave. There were many communities, it wasn't economics necessarily. There were a lot of communities that had similar economic demographics, similar ethnic demographics, similar geographic characteristics. And what he determined made the difference was what he calls the social infrastructure of that community. That communities with stronger social infrastructure, just like how roads keep us connected, social infrastructure, how people within a society are connected to each other on a personal level, not online, person to person. People who lived in communities, like elderly people who were the most vulnerable during this heat wave, elderly people who lived in communities where they had people who were checking on them. That's social infrastructure. And they were less likely to die in a situation like this heat wave. It's a brilliant book. And he talks about many different places where social infrastructure happens. Some of them are transactional, like a bookstore or a barbershop. Some are not, like a school or a childcare place, facility of some kind. But over and over again, he comes back to libraries, why they exist today, you know, what happened to bring the American library into existence in the first place, what they're continuing to do today, how they're keeping up with our evolving world. I usually, on this podcast, as you know, I usually read the opening lines of a book, but I'm not sure, because he begins with the heat wave, I don't think you quite get it. Instead of reading the opening paragraph of the book, I'm going to read the inside of the book jacket, because I think this kind of says it a little bit better. So this is the inside of the book jacket for Palaces for the People: How Social Infrastructure Can Help Fight Inequality, Polarization, and the Decline of Civic Life, by Eric Kleinenberg. It says, "We are living in a time of deep divisions. Americans are sorting themselves along racial, religious, and cultural lines, leading to a level of polarization that the country hasn't seen since the Civil War. Pundits and politicians are calling for us to come together, to find common purpose. But how exactly can this be done? In Palaces for the People, Eric Kleinenberg suggests a way forward. He believes that the future of democratic societies rests not simply on the shared values, but on shared spaces, the libraries, childcare centers, bookstores, churches, synagogues, and parks in which crucial, sometimes life-saving connections are formed. These are places where people gather and linger, making friends across group lines and strengthening the entire community. Kleinenberg calls this the social infrastructure. When it is strong, neighborhoods flourish. When it is neglected, as it has been in recent years, families and individuals must fend for themselves." So, as I say, throughout the book, he makes the case for why we need social infrastructure and what it does. Kleinenberg, of course, spoke at the ALA conference this year. He spoke amazingly with Claire Hayden. And she is not just any librarian. You know the Library of Congress, aka the largest library in the United States? Dr. Hayden is the Librarian of Congress. So that's who's speaking with him and joking around with him in this clip. But check this out. This is Eric Kleinenberg at this year's ALA conference.
At a time when we are searching everywhere for community, for connection, for a sense of belonging, for the engines of democracy that will revitalize our civic life, because everyone in this room knows that we need that more than ever. We are searching everywhere, and too few people stop to realize that they walk by that place every day. We have already around us this extraordinary institution, the most amazing social infrastructure that designers could ever build, and it's called the library. And so everyone here, yeah. We need places that are radically inclusive and that are accessible to everyone, regardless of how much money they have in their pocket, even when they don't want to spend anything. And I can't think of another institution that is so committed to that project of inclusiveness as the library. And obviously, a great reason for that is the fact that libraries are programmed and run by librarians. Right? This is a story about librarians as much as it is about the library, and I think that needs to be emphasized.
I feel a t-shirt coming on. Radical inclusiveness your library.
I like it. But I want us to have good policy that's based on real numbers, but that also has a message and a story. And I think it's important for all of us, when we leave this room, let's make this promise that you know, for the next year, we're not just going to complain about the bad treatment that the library gets, you know, in our local government. We're also going to work really hard to put together a story that's based on good evidence for why our libraries deserve better, and why if we got better, we could do more, and how once we start to get this, we're going to turn things around and revitalize this democratic experiment that really still has a chance to do more great things.
Thank you, Eric.
Our kids' pick for this week is from an author and illustrator who was also at the ALA conference. Yuya Morales is one of the best-loved children's illustrators and authors on the scene today. While at ALA this year, she won the Pura Beltre Award for her absolutely stunning masterpiece, Dreamers. This is a book that I think I'm going to say this every single time. You know, you don't have to be a parent or a grandparent to have children's books in your home. They are magnificent, affordable works of art that, like libraries, have the power to connect you with people. And this is a book I picked for this show because, not just because she won the Pura Beltre Award at the ALA, but because it is a book about the power of libraries, just like Palaces for the People. So it is the story, it's actually her personal story of coming to the United States with her infant son, not speaking the language. She came from Mexico, not speaking the language, feeling very isolated, you know, stranger in a strange land, as they say, and very alone until they found a welcoming space at their local library, particularly in the children's book section. And one of the things I love about this book is it has her trademark lush, colorful, layered, textured illustrations, but it also features the covers of some of the best loved children's books of all time. This book is filled with books. And with her son, by reading these children's books, not only do they, you know, get to escape their isolation in the beauty of these books, they also learn English at the same time. They learn English together reading these children's books in the library. And they also start to connect with their community. Again, they become a part of what Eric Kleinenberg calls the social infrastructure. And this is the social infrastructure in play right here on these beautiful pages of Dreamers by Yuya Morales. I'm going to read the opening of it. It's also available in Spanish. So we're going to do it in English and we're going to do it in Spanish. So first we're looking at it in English. This is Dreamers by Yuya Morales. The opening spread of two pages is breathtaking. You see a large hand holding a pencil and it has written kind of in the air three words, amor, love, amor. And there are these flowers and like aloe that look like they've been embroidered. And you see a mother and she's kind of flying through space, flying through the air with her arms outstretched towards her little baby boy who's also kind of floating in space. And it begins like this. I dreamed of you, then you appeared. Together we became amor, love, amor. Resplendent life, you and I. The next page shows a backpack that is filled with all kinds of treasures. There's a guitar, there's flowers, there's a pencil. It says, one day we bundled gifts in our backpack and crossed a bridge outstretched like the universe. And then you see the mother and the baby and they're on a bridge and the bridge, they look very sad. Behind them, there are mountains. There are swallows and butterflies swirling around. There's cacti behind them. The bridge is over a river, and on either side of the bridge, there's barbed wire. And there's a swallow kind of swooping down across their path, carrying a banner that reads, Adios, corazón, which means goodbye, my heart. So it says again, one day we bundled gifts in our backpack and crossed a bridge outstretched like the universe. And when we made it to the other side, thirsty, in awe, and you see them standing now on a precipice overlooking a great modern city. It says, unable to go back, we became immigrants. And that is the beginning of Yuyi Morales' Dreamers. And now here it is in Spanish. In Spanish, again, it's called Soñadores. You have the same hand with the same large pencil and the same three words, amor, love, amor. Only in Spanish, it goes like this.
Soñé contigo y llegaste. Juntos ahora éramos amor, love, amor. Una vida resplandeciente, tú y yo.
Then you have the page with the backpack and the bridge, and it says,
un día empacamos nuestra mochila y cruzamos un puente tan extenso como el universo, llevando con nosotros nuestros regalos.
And you have that same swallow echoing across their path with the banner that reads, adiós, corazón.
Y cuando llegamos al otro lado, and there they are on the precipice overlooking the city. Cuando llegamos al otro lado, sedientos, sobrecogidos, sin poder volver atrás, nos convertimos en inmigrantes.
We became immigrants. Now, frankly, I would recommend getting both versions, even if you don't speak Spanish. You could learn, just like she learned English from children's books, you could learn a little Spanish from this children's book. You sure could, because again, there's some English and Spanish in both versions. The artwork, though, is outstanding. You can easily see why she won the Pura Belpre Award. This is really a masterpiece. Again, all of the different children's book titles. You know, one of my favorite books from What Pete Ate from A to Z by Myra Kalman, who's one of my very favorite author and illustrators of all time. It's a book with a simple message, but a very deep message. And it's a book I think every single person can relate to. You don't have to, again, you don't have to be a parent. You don't have to be an immigrant even. You can relate to this book. So again, that's Soñadores, Dreamers by Yuyi Morales. Now, we have another clip coming up. We have a lot of clips this show, but it's because we're talking about the ALA. This last clip is not from the ALA conference, the national conference that happened this week. It's from a conference that happened earlier this year in Seattle, I think it was. And the speaker is travel writer and television host slash personality, Rick Steves, who many of you have probably seen on your public television stations, you know, traipsing around Europe with his little backpack and meeting locals. And he always is staying in hostels. You know, he's always kind of hiking through the Cotswolds kind of thing. He's not talking about that, though, in this clip. He's talking about libraries and what happens when they go away and why they might go away. It's a very, very interesting little clip here of Rick Steves speaking also to the ALA, but in Seattle earlier this year. Check it out.
And one trick for a wannabe tyrant is to control information, to target teachers, librarians, professors, to declare journalists our enemies of the people, to inspire their people not to read, but to burn. And Hitler had the burning of the books, and smart people long before that prophesized, when a society is burning its books, soon it will be burning people. And that horrifying event was a turning point as Hitler's tyrant, as Germany's tyrant, led that society astray. Hitler had this ability to dumb down his society. The last thing he wanted to do was build libraries. What Hitler wanted to do was make complicated problems simple. Hitler could stand in front of a great nation and tell lies so convincingly and so repeatedly, and he could build up people's fears, and he could scapegoat immigrants and people who didn't conform to the point that he led his entire nation to ruin. And a lot of it related to controlling that information. Of course, Germany has risen from those ashes 75 years later. When you go to Berlin today, what you find facing the Parliament building is a library. When Germany rebuilt Berlin, it built one of the great modern libraries of Europe, the Library of the German Parliament, facing that Parliament building that has so much history in it. I'm so inspired by the lessons history can teach us, and when we travel thoughtfully, we can gain from those.
Thank you for joining us again for Libros Libres, Books Are Freedom. I don't know about you, but I feel like going to the library right about now. You know, I've been so busy. I think that's maybe one of the reasons I was so busy following all of the social media for the ALA conference was that I've been so busy. I have not had time to go to my own library. So I'm librarying vicariously through their social media feed. You can follow the American Library Association. They're all over the place. They're on Instagram. They're on Twitter. They're everywhere. But if you're feeling a little bit extra generous and think you might want to help libraries in other communities aside from your own, other libraries who might have a very significant need, I strongly encourage you to consider contributing to keep the Colonia Library in the Barrio of La Colonia in Oxnard, California, the childhood home of Cesar Chavez, and the current home to the farm workers who put affordable fruits and vegetables on our table all across the country. Go straight to patreon.com/libroslibres. Again, that's patreon.com/libroslibres. You can contribute for as little as $2 a month. You can give a custom contribution if you want. Just check it out now. For more information about Libros Libres, for my blog, for info about my book, Growing Up in La Colonia, please visit my website, coloniabook.com. Again, that's coloniabook.com. And for now, this is Margot Porras, host of Libros Libres, author of Growing Up in La Colonia, and co-host of that other podcast about books, Book versus Movie, signing off for now. Thanks for listening.